Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, but that is not how I should be saying hello to you today. I should be saying meow or purr or some such cat noise, because the first segment of this show, anyway, is going to be all about cats. Now, dog lovers, don't despair. You always hog all the attention with your big slobbery explosions of energy, and this today won't be different. I'm a dog lover and a cat lover, so we will get to the dogs later in the show, but at first, I'll try and tie some dog topics into the cat topics too, but at first, we've got the pleasure of having two guests, a recurring guest, Dusty Rainbolt, who's written the book that I love called Cat Wrangling Made Easy, and other books too, but that's one of my favorites. It just tells you why your cat does what it does and how you can read its body language if you have more than one to figure out who's getting picked on and who's not and who's happy and just all sorts of things like that. So, Dusty Rainbolt, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me again. It's great to be back.
Yes, it's lovely to have you. And as usual, I'm sure we may have some cat questions flying in today about why the cats do the crazy things they do. But we also have Pat Harbert, and I thought I'd put you two together because it just made sense. Very, you can tell right away why it would make sense. So Pat's coming to us representing Red River Rascals, which is a cat club with members in five South Central states. They're affiliated with the International Cat Association, and she's here to talk about the next cat show in Oklahoma City and some other things too. So welcome to the show, Pat.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have you. You know, a lot of my listeners, I took my kids for the first time ever just a couple weeks ago to their first cat show. A lot of my listeners have never been to a cat show. Mm-hmm. Your next cat show is in Oklahoma City. What can they expect? Do you have to already be into cats? Do you have to be, or is this something that people would really enjoy? What do they expect?
I think it's something for a whole family to enjoy. A lot of people think it's like a dog show where they lead them and they run around a ring, but a cat show, you can actually go around, talk to the owners, meet the cats, and then watch them be judged by sitting in a chair. So you can sit and watch every cat in the show go through each judge.
So when I, you know, it's almost like a car show as opposed to a dog show. Talk to all the owners and then you find out who wants to live.
They move the cats past you instead of you having to watch all of them run around.
It amazed me at this cat show when I stopped to consider that all of the male cats in the room are intact and they're within inches of each other and they're being pulled out and petted and groomed and put back and displayed and handled and nobody's upset about it. That amazed me. What's going on with that? How do you get that?
I think when that's most something people Dusty could help also with, because part of it is training and part of it may be the age of the male cats. If they have not been used for breeding yet, they show them up until they begin to be territorial.
Oh, okay. Is that what's going on there, Dusty?
Absolutely. Well, and you have to remember, these guys, as soon as they're weaned, before they're weaned, they're starting to hold them and train them to relax in strangers' hands, and they're already around a lot of cats anyway if they're coming from a cattery. So they're used to being around a lot of cats. Yeah. And the truth is there's probably some pretty grumpy males out there, but they don't last very long in the show ring. So, the ones that are there are used to being handled, and they're fabulous cats. I love cat shows.
Oh, I do too. We work hard, play hard, and love our cats.
I had to talk my kids into it, which was sort of odd to me because they love cats, they love dogs, but I had to talk them into it. And we walked into this auditorium, and there were these little booths all around the outside where they had the chairs set up for different judgings, and it's sort of a platform where the cat is then sort of put, almost like a preacher bima sort of thing, for people to, like a platform for people to actually see it. Yeah. And cages all behind where the cats wait before they get examined, and cages all with the owners on their displays and their extra cats. And both my kids were, they weren't going anywhere fast. Like, it was just fascinating. The amount of variety is so interesting.
We have a program in Tika also where youngsters can show. Usually they start out showing their household pets rather than a purebred, and they learn how to prepare the cat ahead of time, how to handle a cat, how to present it to the judge, and then they begin to learn more and more about breeds, and they get training in public speaking and leadership, and we have some that have moved on to the judging program. So they really enjoy it.
Well, I saw cats that look like monkeys, cats that look like kittens perpetually, cats that look like leopards, cats that look like
lions. We actually even have one now that's supposed to look like a werewolf.
A werewolf? Oh, I think, you know what, I think I saw that guy. I remember thinking that was kind of a sad-looking animal. But you know, it's all beauty in the eye of the beholder.
Some of the owners just adore them.
Right? Some people think drooly dogs are cool. It's all about perspective. So a kid can enter a cat that isn't a show cat, isn't intact, or, you know, can just be your cat, your little domestic
cat. Household pets have to be altered.
But it has to be a certain kind of cat, right? I mean, I wouldn't suggest people be trying to show their cat that doesn't like people, right?
As long as it's healthy, clean, and able to be handled, you know, where it's not terrified in a group, they can show it in the household pet program. And they receive titles and awards just like the pedigreed cats in Tika.
If I could make a point here, one of the things I enjoy most are the household pets. And it seems like every time I see a judge handling a household pet, they will almost always say, "This is my favorite category." They just love to get these kitties in that are just plain old kitty cats. And the cats love to be handled, and they love to be in the public eye, and the judges like it, the public likes it. Just go and enjoy the household pets, even if you don't know anything about the other breeds. It's a good way to stick your toe in.
Yeah.
Well, if people want to do that, Dusty, how would you suggest they start? Say they have a kid who's maybe 12 or 15 and really bonded to the cat, or maybe an adult wants to start and just bring their regular cat. How do you get the cat ready for that?
Like I said, you have to have it clean. If that means a bath or taking it to a groomer, it has to have all of its shots up to date and be handled enough that they know it's going to be comfortable in a situation like that. And then they go to the RedRiverRascals.com, and it will have information on how they can enter their cat in the show.
Dusty, to follow up with that, if people are listening and they want to get from where they are now, they just had this idea, to that step where they're actually loading up the car and driving to the show and pre-registering, what should they do in the middle? If this was a dog show and a dog, I would be saying things like, get it used to the kennel, get it used to the car. What about when it's a cat?
Oh, exactly the same thing. You know, you start by handling the kitty, holding them from underneath. You can see pictures on Google Images about how they stretch the cats out on the stand. You have your friends come over and hold them. You kind of handle the face and stretch the tail out and handle their paws. I think Tika allows declawed cats, but CFA household pets or pedigreed cats cannot be declawed.
Yes, so. Tika allows it because so many cats are rescued, and they may already be declawed, and so they do allow for household pets to be shown.
Yeah, but I think that CFA doesn't.
And yeah,
so,
I don't
you know,
think
that,
so.
That gives you options. But it's mainly just handling them. Have your friends handle them. Take them to the vet. Let the vet techs handle them.
Take them to PetSmart or Petco. And
exactly.
But it'd be the high ceilings.
When you're doing this, I would always advise people to have the people wash their hands first or put sanitizer on.
Yes. See, now that person. I'm that person that walks around when I take my puppies, because I'm a dog breeder, when I take my puppies to visit the schools and stuff like that, I'm that person who makes the kids line up and I spray them all on the hands and I make sure they get both sides there.
Yes, you have
hands.
Sanitizer at the benching.
I got it. It's on me. Because you can't expect everybody to be as worried about. And the thing is, as much as you might vaccinate and protect your pet, there's things that can be carried. There's things that can be transmitted. So you want to keep those risks down. So I think a good brush after an outing is important too, right?
One cat may be immune to something, but someone handling it may go to another cat, and it may not be immune to it.
Well, and that's another thing about cat shows. If you've never been to a cat show, don't expect to get to play with the kitties because the owners don't know where your hands have been. And so, you know,
there are a few that will let them pet them if they have hand sanitizer, but not very many.
Yeah, they generally require you to use the sanitizer. But for the most part, they don't want you touching them because they don't want you coming in or a person coming in with perhaps ringworm on their fingers.
That's
happened to me at Petco when I've had kitties up there available for adoption. They'll get ringworm on their nose or their paws. Because
I hate ringworm. I hate it. For people listening, it's not really a worm. It's a fungus. And it gets into animals, usually puppies and kittens, but kids too. And the treatment takes forever. And you have to isolate the animals from the kids. And oh my goodness, when I've rescued kittens before.
If you ever get it around your cats, you can't show them until it's been cleared for at least 30 days.
So that's the reason people aren't being mean because they won't let you pet the cat. That's the reason. They don't want you inadvertently giving their cat something that's going to cause problems.
Right.
So
would it be correct to suggest, because this is what I would suggest for a dog show, if someone was asking me, I want to show my dog, I want to show it in a dog show, I'm going to register it, I would say, go to one first. No dog. Check
it
out.
That's a good idea.
Same thing with the cat?
I agree.
Okay.
Go to a show, see what it's all about. We have another one coming up in Wichita the 12th of this month, and they could go see the show and then maybe decide they want to enter their cat in the Oklahoma City show.
Nice. Well, I went to this cat show, as I told you, and the thing that I had to buy, in fact, I bought quite a few of, that I wish I was a seller of, I wish I had these things on my online store, I may look for it, was this, it was only $2. But 100% of the profits went to cat rescue, so I was happy to buy a whole whack of them.
Yes.
And it was a very simple black hairband, plastic hairband, just like little girls wear to school every day, only it had two triangular cat's ears on it. And I'm not kidding you, this thing was all over. People were wearing, everybody was buying these. So I thought that was a great, great aspect to the whole thing.
Yes.
Giving the money to the shelters and the rescue. Is your organization hooked up with that?
Our organization usually donates to the Animal Resource Center in Oklahoma City. It's just recently been changed to New Leash on Life. And then we also donate to Recycled Love, which is a rescue that takes elderly animals from the shelters and places them with older people after they get them healthy and vaccinated, and also the local shelters around. Our gate is usually run by the Oklahoma City Pet Pantry so that they can provide food for people who have no money to feed their pets, because pets are so important to people.
And I think sometimes breeders and show people, and I'm a breeder, we get blamed, and it's not even acknowledged that we're the same people doing the rescue. We're the same people contributing I mean, I just picked up a dog from the fire zone. I drove 3 hours out of my way, two ways, my gas, my dime. Got her vaccinated. Have to quarantine her from all other animals here for 3 days and for 21 days from any puppies. You know, that's just because I felt bad for her. And, you know, there's so many situations like that. In 2000, I saved 100 cats that were part of a hoarding apprehension by the local authorities. And I don't even run a cattery. I mean, why they came to my dog kennel? Why? Because sometimes it's the animal lovers, the animal breeders, the show people who are the only ones they can ask, the only ones set up to do this kind of stuff.
Yes.
You ever tried to handle 96 or so cats that want to bite you because they've never been handled in their life?
Mm-hmm.
It's not for everybody. So, you know, the best rescue work often is being done by the professionals. And when you go to a cat show, you see that aspect of it too. It's not just the fortunate cats, and it's not something you need to feel guilty about. So, Dusty, I know that animal rescue and cats is close to your heart, and in fact, you often, while I'm talking to you, seem to have foster kittens somewhere in your house. Do you want to say something about how people can help part-time, full-time with a cat, an older cat? What's most needed out there?
Well, now, are you talking about fostering?
I'm talking about just how can, if someone has a soft spot for cats, how can they help? What's the best way right now?
Oh, I think that offering to foster a cat, or especially an older or special needs cat, or you know, small kitten, is fabulous, because it doesn't matter whether you are the largest facility in the country, like Best Friends or ASPCA New York, or if you're the little group down the street that has their adoption center at Petco and PetSmart. Everybody needs foster homes. So if you contact your local group and tell them you want to foster a cat, that's how you're going to save lives.
Yes.
And, you know, if you can't do that, then coming in, volunteering, you know, cleaning cages, just socializing cats that are you know, in cages awaiting adoption. That's so important, because they need to be handled. They need to be touched.
Mm-hmm.
They need to get over the fear of being in a cage. I know it sounds silly. Provide paper bags or in little boxes, so these cats in cages have places to go. There's just all kinds
and even of things like driving. If you have a vehicle and you're willing to drive a cat from somewhere to somewhere, some of these foster people don't have cars.
And
there's a vet appointment. It's not a big deal, you know, but you might make a friend. You might get connected. So if someone joins your club, I want to know, Pat, what would it be like for them when they go to a show? Are they working? Are they working the door?
Yes, the
what are
day
they up
before
to?
Before the show, we work real hard setting everything up. We have to set up the cages and tables for the cats and the judges' stands. And, of course, we have our decorations. We're usually a cowboy theme in Oklahoma City. So we work all together and get that set up. And then after the show, we take it all down and put it up for the next year. During the show, we have different jobs for everybody to do. So they're involved in all parts of the show, and yet at the same time can show their own kitties.
So if people are looking for a way into the cat world, but maybe you can't own a cat at this time, or you're just not ready to, maybe your cat passed away and you're still too attached, this would be a really good way to connect with the cat world.
They sure could. Some of our members are rescuers, some of them are breeders, and some of them just adore cats.
Do you have any future plans for this club?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we're branching out and starting a new club in Muskogee, so we can branch it and get it a little bit closer to Arkansas. So we can invite in more and more people that enjoy being around cats and working together with cat lovers.
You know, I guess this question could go to either of you, but I'll put it to Pat, because I think we're coming close to a break. I'm not really sure. I've gotten so carried away with this topic. Don't often have two cat experts on at the same time. It's usually doggy, doggy, doggy on this show. So a little bit of horse thrown in and some wildlife. Pardon me?
My cats own their own dog.
Oh, nice. Now, what kind of dog?
She's a German Shepherd.
And she does what they want?
Oh, yes. And when she's scared of lightning, they lick her ears and calm her down.
She thinks they're her herd or her flock.
Yes.
That's what's going on with that.
Or they think
they're
she
not the boss
is. I'm not
her.
Sure.
She's their care minder. That's very nice. Well, I wanted to ask, I guess both of you can take turns. We'll go with Pat first. A lot of times people who talk to me about dog shows usually, but cat shows too, they roll their eyes. After I went to this cat show and I was talking about it for a week or two after, you know, all I was talking about, oh, you wouldn't believe this, and you wouldn't, people were getting sick of it, right? Rolling their eyes at me. And they would say, that's just a glorified beauty contest, isn't it? And then I have to argue, well, actually, the standards are about the health and fitness, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, yeah, it is kind of a beauty contest on some levels.
It is.
Do you want an ugly cat?
It has its own standards, and they have to fit that standard. But then the cleanliness, the health, all of the cat care that we try to teach so desperately, because we feel like if people care for animals, they make kinder individuals.
Dusty, what about
yes.
behavior? When the judge holds that cat up and he stretches out the tail and he feels around the cheeks and he's looking at, okay, I think certain cats, he wants a certain length of head, a certain length of tail.
Mm-hmm.
Each cat has a different standard, just like the dog world. But in the dog world, the dog can't bite, the dog can't growl, the dog can't get wild, the dog can't pee or misbehave, and all that stuff happens live on camera. So what about in the cat world? What's the deal with that?
Well, I'm not really sure what your question is. They do sometimes misbehave. I've seen...
like what would be considered a good cat compared to a misbehaving cat? Because you don't... I didn't see it any... This entire show, I didn't see any cat scratch, growl, lash out. So I'm trying to decide... I mean, in the dog world, you can tell the bad ones from the good ones. It's really noticeable, right? The ones
mm-hmm.
who are flunking, you notice. What are they seeing in the cats that makes one well-behaved and the other... not?
I think that's a better question for Pat. Why don't you answer that?
Well, I do know that in Tika, if the cat is afraid, that's not a disqualification. And I've seen judges work so sweet with them, try to calm down. And the disqualification is if the cat shows aggression and tries to scratch or bite, they can be disqualified and removed from the ring.
What if the cat is just too reactive, like starts to get playful or act like the prey drives an issue? Maybe goes for the cuff of the show. Is that a sign that
no,
the cat's flirt?
Playfulness.
Is that...
The judges really know how to handle them, so they can usually use a teaser and work with them so they avoid having their hand caught instead of the toy. But playfulness is encouraged. I've seen them climb all the way to the top of a scratching post, just having a good time.
I've also seen them climb to the top of the judge's head and stand there. and of course, that one's one of the ones that always comes in highest because it's
oh, yes.
adorable. How can you?
The judges love them.
Yeah. But yeah, when they
see now in the
playful,
dog world, that would not get big points at all. That's really interesting. That's a reversal there.
Yeah, cats are encouraged to play.
Yeah, that's a part of the beauty, especially in household pets, is that if you can get them to play and
mm-hmm.
and show the personality. Because not only is a cat show a beauty contest, a good judge will sit there and talk about the breed itself. Okay, here's
yes.
a Turkish Van, and I can say Turkish Van because I've got them, or I used to. And, you know, Turkish Vans, blah, 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 they're active, they're cobby, you know, they have... big muscles, blah, 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 as opposed to the Turkish Angora, which is a finer boned.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay,
it's
the
also
Turkish
about
Van, are they the swimmers? They're the swimmers, right?
They are the swimming cat, yes, indeed. And they do swim in the wild at the Van Lake in Turkey near Mount Ararat.
mm-hmm. Well, from what I've seen around my farm, in almost every kitten that grows up here eventually has some kind of mishap. Cats can swim. They can. I've seen them swim out of the pond. I've seen them swim out of the hot tub, which is their usual mistake.
Yep, they can if they have to.
yes. And they're good. They're actually mm-hmm. good swimmers, I was surprised to discover.
I have bangles, and I have had them that jump in the shower with me. So,
Well, Turkish bans usually have to be raised around water in order to want to swim. Most of them are fascinated by water, but for the ones that you see in the swimming pools and the bathtubs, those animals have probably been raised with water.
That.
Yeah, so it's not something all of a sudden when they're 8 months old, they go, oh, I'm going to go jump in the water. That doesn't happen.
That's interesting because with, I've had both examples with dogs. I've had dogs who are not of a water breed, but at some point in their life, they just decide, okay, the game's in the water. I'm joining in. I can't miss out anymore. And then I've had other dogs that are a retriever, a water breed, that have never been around water. And the first time they jump in, they literally sink because they don't think to even, but within the same day, they're one of the best swimmers in the dog pond, So it's a both thing with dogs. It's nature and nurture. And it sounds like the same with these particular cats. Ladies, yeah. We ran out of time. I don't know how we did that, but it was such a great show. So, Dusty, can I invite you to just let people know what website they can look for more from you? And then we'll go with Pat after that and give out the websites.
Sure. My website is dustycatwriter.com, and that's WRITER. And I do want, if people out there have had situations with inappropriate elimination and they've overcome them, I'd love to be able to include your stories in my book. So you can reach me at dustycatwriter@pobox.com.
Oh, I have one of those.
Well,
because you helped me with it live on air.
Oh, cool.
I have one of those from one of my customers. It was one of my callers to my website with a question that, and it was an older cat, and you figured out that it had to do with sight and different things like that. I'll remember that one, a calico female who was afraid of mostly everything, and all of a sudden at 10 just randomly started peeing on the bed. And the person didn't understand because she'd always use the covered litter box where it was and the open litter box where it was, and everything was fine. And as it turns out, by following your advice, which I believe, Loretta, I think you told her to go with completely uncovered litter boxes and leave a light on for a while, and for 3 weeks shut the cat out of the area with the bed it was using. And she called back to the show and said it not only worked, but now she put the lid back on one of the litter boxes and it still works.
Yay.
So she's good. Totally happy. Opened up the bedroom door. The cat sleeps on the bed again. Everything's good. So I had one for you. It's your own, though.
Excellent.
Yeah, just had a Bengal rehomed because the husband was trying to break the cat from urinating on the bed by stamping his feet and yelling at it.
Oh, well, that helped, didn't it?
Yeah, it just did it more.
Yep.
You'll have
to
understand.
It's very happy in a new home now.
People have to understand that when an animal urinates, it's a submission and it's a fear. And so to make it more afraid and more like you're tough and scary and in charge is not going to solve it. It's the wrong way around. So picture a kid who's so scared he pees himself when he's having a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help that by screaming at him. This is not going to work. So try something nice and kind, or go see a trainer, or better yet, rehome that poor animal. They deserve better than that. Well, thank you for joining me today, ladies. Pat Harbert, we should give out your website again for Red River Rascals.
RedRiverRascals.com.
There we go. Red River Rascals. You see that 5 times. All right. So thank you, Pat, and thank you, Dusty. Until next time, Dusty, I always enjoy talking to you.
I enjoyed it.
Me too.
Okay. All right, everybody, stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. It's me, Deborah Wolf, dog trainer, cat training dabbler, and we'll be back after this.
I'm your doggy,
I'm your doggy,
and I love you,
and I love you,
and you know that
you know
I really do,
I really do.
Hey, pet lovers, listen up. No more fleas and no more ticks with the No More Tick Spray. All natural, non-toxic, and even safe enough for you to use on yourself. It smells great. You have to try it. It really works. This is what I want you to do. Go to www.nomoreticks.com Once again, nomoreticks.com. Your pet will love you for it. Go to nomoreticks.com.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Hey, pet lovers, listen up. Purr Spray Pet, all-natural, non-toxic spray for all of your pet problems. Proven safe to use for their skin, eyes, and ears. Helps calm and heal wounds, hot spots, insect bites, and lots more. Will not sting. And very safe to use, even for your feathered friends. To find out how you can keep your pets happy and healthy, go to purrspraypet.com. That's purrspraypet.com. purrspraypet.com. Or call us now at 386-310-3924.
Scratch it.
Is your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426 or on the web www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Hey, pet lovers, listen up. Preen Pets, 100% natural dog treats made and sourced in the USA. Positively no chemicals and no additives. Treats, sticks, and bones made with chicken, fish, pork, turkey, beef, and vegetables. Wow, and vegetables? This is what I want you to do. Go to www.preenpets.com. That is PREENPETS.com. Give your furry children the best nutrition for a long and healthy life. Go to preenpets.com. Your pets will love you for it. Hello. You're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. With me, Deb Wolf, deborahwolfonline.com. If you're looking for the special deals I'm about to hook you up with on my website, haven't come yet, but they're coming soon. Plus, there's links there to everything. All the puppies and dogs that come to Camp Good Dog, swimming in the pond and hanging out and doing their doggy little camping trips when they come out here, when their owners go on holiday to exotic places the dogs would rather miss out on and just get dirty in the Canadian forest than get clean and go home again to their life in the city. So we service the dogs of Vancouver and we take their pictures and you get to see them looking really happy. You can find that on my site and old radio shows and like I said, some special offers coming soon at deborahwolfonline.com if you want to sign up. It'll be happening very soon. So right now we just did a cat show. And I forgot to tell the ladies about this place I heard of called Aoshima in southern Japan. It's an island. Now picture this. If you don't like people and you do like cats, the population of this island is 22 people and 120 cats. Wow. Imagine life there. Okay. So I have some other news items. And one of them I want to talk about, and then I'll introduce my first guest because I think she may have something to say about this. There was a family with an autistic kid who has anxiety issues and has a trained dog to work with him. He's tethered to the dog so he won't run into traffic, and the dog helps him with stress. And this kid is from Toronto, so is the dog and the family. And they've gone all over the world and all over the country. No problems getting the dog on boats and helicopters, this, that, and the other. Until they came to my province, my city, my area, British Columbia, Canada, to watch some whales. And two of the guide dog, or two of the whale watching boat companies refused them to let the dog on. Then they went and called a third and they refused too. So they've been talking about this a lot in the news. And guide dogs are supposed to be viewed as an extension of the disabled person. And an autistic assistance dog is supposed to be considered the same as a seeing eye dog if it's registered and licensed and trained. However, Bill Thornton, who's someone who I've had on my show before, he's the spokesperson for BC Guide Dogs in Canada. They train dogs for the blind, and the dogs that don't quite make it through the program all the way are sometimes retrained for kids with autism. So he knows what he's talking about here. Bill Thornton said, well, they really do have a right to bring the dog anywhere. On the other hand, that boat is very fast, and it's a very long journey, and there's an unpredictability factor when they actually see the whales. So, where do you go with that one? Service rights versus animal rights versus the public's rights. It's a tough one. And we've got a guest on the show coming up who deals with Merlin's kids, shelter dogs, service dogs, shelter dogs retrained for service. So, Janice Wolf, I thought I'd bring this question to you. What do you think about all this?
Well, thanks, Deborah. It's great to be on the show, as always.
Thank you.
That is something that we weigh in on every day. There are so many different opportunities that are presented once somebody has a trained service dog. Just for everyone to know that in the United States, you don't have to have a dog certified. There is no certifying agency in the U.S. And the typical issues affiliated with somebody who has a service dog is access. Now, if you would say the dog was on a boat, and that's funny because this last week I was on Lake Ontario with one of my service dogs, Rhodesian Ridgebacks are notoriously not happy about being in or near water, but he had to go because I went. So I would always look at first if there was a way that in that situation that the dog might be able to, rather than being there, that the dog might be able to be sort of supplemented. This is one of those questions that, for lack of a better pun, dog does in the industry. When we're training a dog to be a service dog for a child, first we want to do is make sure that we don't create any additional problems beside the issues that we already have. So if the chance of this boat and if something did happen and the dog had to be rescued, or if the dog barked and scared the whales away or scared somebody away, or if somebody else on the boat is fearful of dogs, we would try to be, as much as possible, you know, be sensitive to that issue. So this is something that really should have been discussed with the boat owner, or like with anything. We should give people a little bit of a heads up. Now, restaurants, malls, different situations like that it's kind of public access is one thing. But in the U.S., now I don't know in Canada, although we do have quite a few service dogs up in Canada, in the U.S., it's a public location or a place that is reasonably required to accommodate public, you know, people in the public. So, you know, that's a really tough one. I have brought dogs on boats before, certainly, and on cruise ships. But if it's something like that with a whale watching where, people could be potentially moving around or the dog could bark or be afraid, those things are things that definitely should have been addressed and spoken with the owner of the boat or the company ahead of time.
It occurs to me that even the restroom issue, where does the dog go to the bathroom if this is a 5 or 6 hour trip, is kind of an issue.
That's nothing. We've been on 14-hour plane rides, and a dog who is well-trained and well-behaved should be able to easily go 12 hours without a problem. And if the dog isn't able to do that, it might not be the right service dog. That's one of the requirements. We have dogs potty on command, So if we are, you know, going to be going on a long plane ride, the dogs are basically, you know, relieved ahead of time, and we'll say, you know, go take our words or go take a break. They'll go take a break, and now they're set for, you know, 10, 12, 14 hours. We've had some of our dogs even go longer than that. But obviously, you know, you have to be sensitive to the needs of the dog, and you do have to continue to give the dog water when it needs it as well.
If you're listening out there and you think, hey, why didn't I teach my dog that? Yeah, I'm wondering the same thing. Why didn't you teach your dog that? When you were house training your dog and you took it out for its pee-pee breaks and his poo-poo breaks and you said, good puppy, when you were doing that, you could have assigned a word to it. Like, do you want to use the bathroom? Or you could do it in another language. You can be discreet. You can make up a word. Your dog will know the word. Just don't use a word that's like your surname or something, the name of your business, something that you're using all the time. Okay, pick a word that's special. You say that word. When I was a kid, one of our puppies was trained to the word snapper. Do you want some snapper? And she'd go running outside. I think it was because she used to bark and kind of snap at the bushes and when she did her thing. And that's how it started with us kids using that word. But it doesn't really matter what word you use. Even right now, even with your grown dog, when you go out to the bathroom and he lifts his leg on a tree or she squats, just start saying the word and telling her, good girl. She'll know what you mean. In a couple of weeks, you'll be able to tell her. And it's so convenient for road trips and things like that. When you don't want to stop in another 20 minutes because the dog didn't bother to go at the last stop, right?
If only it would work with children.
Yeah, if only. Yes, and adults and parents. Yes, yes, it doesn't quite work the same. You know, there's this comedy routine I saw on TV the other day, a comedy special from Comedy Now. And the guy talks about how he was at the bank and he was waiting for his wife and he could tell it was going to be a long time. And he couldn't really leave and he couldn't really go. But the dogs needed to have a bathroom break. And he saw this beautiful yard right there at the bank with this sign that said, no dogs. And he thought, I'll just take him up for a little pee break. He takes his two little dogs out for a pee break. And he's standing there with one on either side of the no dog sign. And somebody comes out of the bank and says, excuse me, but that's, that sign says no dogs. And the guy answers, oh, yeah. I guess the sign's wrong. It should say two dogs. I just thought, yeah, right on.
Or dogs can't read.
But in some ways, we do have to respect each other. And that's the thing. If you go breaking the rules, if you go trying to get your service dog or normal dog into areas it shouldn't be, and it's not very well behaved, then you're creating problems for everybody else. You got a poop scoop or everybody gets barred from the park, right?
Exactly. But that's one of the things that if people would prepare, just in general, when we train a service dog, and I train people to train dogs and train them to become canine behaviorists as well, and that's one of the main things we always do, is sensitivity to other people, even to the point of a lot of people who think that they're training or trying to train their own dog to be a service dog, they figure, well, my dog's not great with other dogs or animals, but what are the chances that I'll be on an airplane with another dog? Well, they're pretty good. So always assume that whatever you're training the dog to do, assume that you're training under versus over. Always try to do more. And even with your own dog, expose your dog to a lot of different situations and a lot of different things that, you know, eventually, like let's say the dog with a boat, get him used to moving around, get him used to a train, a plane, a bus. That he's not always assuming that every time he goes out, he's going out in the same car.
The bigger his world, the more he's used to, the better. You know, it's just so, this idea that a service dog, because he happens to be good with the people he knows or children or some small part of the world population, but he chases cats. He's got prey drive like mad. He'll catch and kill any cat he sees. He can't go to the hospital. What if on the same day there's a cat, you know, service animal visiting? It's not going to fly, right? I mean, you got to train it. You can't have this idea that my dog's going to work, but he can't be around this and he can't be around that and he can't handle this. And he's really good with people though. Well, then, you know, love him to pieces. That's not the situation. These are work dogs. So you take shelter dogs and make them into service dogs. Is that correct?
Exactly. And it's not every dog. They're probably about 1 in 10 dogs could be trained to be a therapy dog. That's a dog who goes into the hospital or you know, just as generally a well-behaved dog that kind of lies there and is able to have people, you know, petting him and fawning all over him, and he's not going to be jumping on them and barking at them. But remarkably few of those dogs are actually good with other dogs, and even that can be a problem sometimes. Yeah, dogs have to be social to all the general public, people in wheelchairs, people with crutches and canes, other dogs, other animals, older people, just people of different races, people of different ages.
People on crutches, people who walk funny, people on wheels, like wheelchairs, right? So,
right,
walkers, yeah. All that kind of stuff. And some dogs are really freaked out by that sort of stuff. It's nothing you can't solve with training, but if your dog's kind of a nervous, anxious sort, it's probably not the right work, right?
He's absolutely not. And when we start training a dog to be a service dog, you have an additional level, because now you're not only asking the dog to be well-behaved and to be social, you're asking him to do a job without being distracted. And that's the biggest problem I see. A lot of times people have a dog that they want to train to be a service dog, but the dog isn't good with other people, or it's not good with a particular, you know, race of people, or little kids or older people. And, you know, the dog for service dog, it's a whole other level. And, you know, you can't just take the dog that you have at home and say, oh, he's the best dog in the world and I love him. Well, yeah, he may be your best dog in the world, but he may not be the best dog in the world. And to take your dog out and subject him and other people to potentially a bad day that he's having, and if he's out there and perhaps doing something that we don't want him to do, you know, people can get bitten. And it's, the other part of that is when people see a dog in a vest, for anyone who is thinking of going out and buying one online, when people see a dog in a vest and it says service dog and you pretend or you say that the dog is a service dog, they assume at face value that it is a service dog. And what happens is, it causes a problem for other people who do have a legitimate service dog. So if there is anybody who is looking to train their own dog to be a service dog or to be a therapy dog to go and work in hospitals and so on and nursing homes, then that is something that we personally, one by one, evaluate each dog and handler team to see if not only the dog but the human have what it takes to be that 1 in 100 who can possibly become a service dog. It's a very long process, and you know, we train on all kinds of crazy things. We train with other dogs. One of the things we do is we walk past dogs who are barking and lunging, and our dog has to walk through and not even acknowledge, because you never know what you're going to see when you're out there. And we certainly have had enough when I've had Wyatt or Wispa or Savannah out on airplanes where there's a dog in, you know, in the airport that's running around trying to bite them, and they literally ignore it, and people are just always blown away. But that's a training thing. The more we train in the more locations, the more stable our dog is, and the more stable our dog is, the better behavior.
A while back, I interviewed someone from the Delta Society, an examiner for this type of program, hospital visits. And I think I remember him saying that the thing he most flunked dogs for was the food problem. That if they were visiting a hospital and the patient was eating or had a tray of leftover food or a food dropped or meds dropped, the dog can't eat it. The dog can't go for it. And a lot of these Labs and Goldens, that for him was the flunker. Do you have that problem too?
Well, we don't, because we don't use Labs and Goldens or the Doodles or any of the dogs that have that kind of personality. We use different types of dogs. We do have a couple of Lab mixes, a couple of Golden mixes, but I use typically a lot of Rhodesian Ridgebacks who would like nothing more than to be perfect because they don't like being wrong. They don't like when they know that they didn't do something right, they're all upset on their own. You don't have to say a word. And it's even with certain dogs that are mixtures of those breeds. So we kind of don't take the typical dogs who tend to be those kind of dogs. Because, you know, there's nothing cuter than a really well-behaved, even a knuckleheaded Golden who just wants to go play and be a dog. And he just wants to go chase his tail and, you know, run around and have just the time of his life. So I could never understand why we would want to take a dog that had that great temperament and force him basically to lose his inner puppy and have to
right.
behave so differently from what nature made him. So that's where I take dogs who are more, yes, they might have some behavior.
Job-minded. You're talking about
but
the job mind.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
The ethic.
They
there are dogs out
do
there
it.
Who are not happy if not given work. I have a blue heeler.
Right.
He stares at me all day
oh,
long.
Yeah.
What's my next job? What's my next job? What's my next job? My golden is so happy to go swimming and then sleep, right? There's
right.
a different personality.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that we do. One of the things that people don't realize is you have people who are raising puppies for some of the different, groups, and they don't give those people, and I have this because I have a whole group of kids at several universities and one of them in New Jersey, and the training, they keep saying to me, oh my gosh, I never knew this. I've done fosters for, you know, how many other dogs for other groups. Nobody ever taught me this. I love to teach everybody who's going to be fostering. We have classes that we actually go through. This is what you don't do. This is from the time the dog is a puppy. This is how you handle it. But even so, because I am a behaviorist and I'm able to take dogs from all different kinds of backgrounds, even dogs who have been food aggressive in the past, and teach them, hey, buddy, that's not your food, that's mine, and we don't even look at that, literally in a couple of days, without being mean, without ever yelling or screaming or throwing things or dog collars or prong collars or choker chains or anything like that. I would never use that on a dog. It's all about teaching. And if you think about teaching your child the words to a song, you wouldn't yell at your child if your child was wrong. You would just say, no, honey, that's not what it is. This is what it is. And
right.
that reinforcement of constantly this is the way it is a behavioral trait rather than giving them a cookie or a reward for doing a particular trick.
Do you know, you just touched on two things that are so important to me. And sometimes I get on the air with somebody who advocates shock collars, pain collars,
never.
And they say that it's actually mimicking the mother dog and that it's humane and that they get better results and that my methods, which is, you know, basically get the dog's trust first and then show them what you want, direct them to do it and praise them like crazy, repeat, 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 and mix it up with other things so he doesn't get bored. But constantly keep showing him if he does what you want, he gets praised and touched and pet. And there's an occasional cookie, like you'd give a sticker to a kid who does something exceptional or jumps a level or just to keep him interested from time to time, maybe to lose a fear, occasional treat. But mostly it's praise. And, you know, I've had this guy, Vladdy, the dog wizard, on where he just goes on and on about how that's just not an extreme enough standard and he gets results quicker. And I would argue, you know what, if that were true, then all the service dogs in the world would be trained with pain devices. And it just doesn't happen because it's not true. It doesn't make better results. In fact, it makes an unpredictable dog, right?
Exactly. One of the biggest problems, Deborah, is, and again, I'm a behaviorist. I've fixed more than 25,000, probably over 27,000 at this stage, dogs with behavioral issues. And the one thing that causes a breakdown is when the dog no longer trusts the human. When you lose the dog's trust, you have nothing. So even the dog who's in a shelter, who nobody can get near but one person, we can fix that dog. We can work with that dog because that dog has trust for someone. But when you start shocking a dog or some of these crazy people that are throwing like a beanbag with a bicycle chain in it or squirting a dog, just imagine if you came into a house and, you know, there's your dad waiting for you. And not every time, but every 100 times, only 3 or 4 times a year, he shot you in the face with vinegar or something. Or he hit you one time only every, let's say, 100 days, you wouldn't have trust. You'd never be able to build up that trust. And that's the whole fundamental of having a dog, especially a service dog, is being able to trust the handler that no matter what happens, that dog knows he can count on you. And that's why I use as an example very often, if anybody ever had a spouse or a boyfriend who cheated on them, or female, cheated on them. And you'd say, well, I'll never do it again. But you did it the first time. And how can I really ever trust you? So it's a very funny thing when people start saying, oh, it happens quicker. Yeah, sure. If you're torturing me, I might give you information quicker. but I will never trust you, and I will never do anything for you. And the first
chance I'm waiting for my opportunity. Really? I'm waiting for my opportunity to leave. Okay, so we've been on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We only have a minute left. It's DeborahWolfOnline.com if you want to hook up with me. But if you want to hear all about Merlin's kids, shelter dogs and service dogs in New Jersey, where should they go, Janet?
We have www.merlinskids.org or 855-HI-WYATT, W-Y-A-T-T. And I also have a show on the same network called From Shelter Dog to Service Dog, if anybody wants to tune in. And Deborah is amazing, and it's always wonderful to be on with you. I'm just so glad that you realize that way to a dog's heart is through trust, not through anything else of being cruel, but that true trust and that true bond.
You know what? I so appreciate it when my dog overrides me, and I've had it happen with a bear, and I gave the wrong command, and he overrode me, and he was right. And you don't get that when you pain train a dog. You get obedience, and you get the bear attacking you. So I told him to stay, and he didn't stay. He put himself between me and the bear, and he was right. So anyway, Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Until next week, be good to your animals.
And anytime.